Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Back to the conversation now as we continue our discussion about the legacy of the late President Bush. He published several books. The Washington Post nonfiction book critic Carlos Lozada says we got glimpses in those books of what could have been a terrific memoir, but we didn't get that memoir. Carlos, welcome back to the show. It's really good to talk to you again.
Good to be with you, Carrie.
You believed that his letters and diaries and jottings indicate that there could have been an exceptional memoir to come. Why didn't he write it?
You know, he got asked many times why he wasn't doing that. And he simply said that he was unpersuaded. He felt plenty of people have written about me. You know, Barbara wrote a memoir that had a lot about our family. He felt like he didn't need to do it. Maybe, you know, he always kind of struggled expressing himself in very inspirational ways. And perhaps he was afraid that that would happen on the page as well. But I think it was a real loss for us. The various books that he wrote, one was kind of like a faux memoir. It was kind of a ghostwritten, a campaign book. He wrote a collection of, he put together a collection of his letters, which were wonderful. He co-wrote a foreign policy book with Brent Scowcroft. And he had a diary of his time in China in the 70s when he was basically the U.S. representative there. But he never kind of just wrote the full-on, honest, personal memoir of the whole thing.
You know, what you've just said about perhaps a perception that Bush thought that a memoir would be kind of self-indulgent and, you know, the kind of self-examination that he didn't want to put into a book. And yet you find that in the letters, right? He's very reflective and thoughtful and self-examining in those letters.
He really is. That collection is extraordinary. And I think if any listeners or readers want to get a real sense of George H.W. Bush just as a person, he always talks about, you know, getting a sense of someone's heartbeat. If you want to see his heartbeat or feel his heartbeat, it's the collection of letters. But it's in the preface to that collection where he says, this is not meant to be a memoir. This is not, you know, this is not that. he was always very sort of self-aware about his speaking style, you know, and he talks about how right before the first Gulf War, aides were encouraging him to, you know, do sort of like some FDR style, you know, fireside chats, whatever that would be for the early 90s. And he just said, look, I'm not good at that. I don't want to do that. And yet in his letters, you do see a lot of self-reflection. It doesn't really matter whether it's incredibly articulate or not, just because it feels so honest.
You know what else I was thinking about? And I think we heard some of this in the calls that we took during our segment with Ken Rudin. I mean, there were some in any politician's life. He wasn't unique in this. There are choices that you make that if you went back, you'd probably choose something different. But I mean, he had some rather uncomfortable truths about the choices he made, the way he ran that election campaign that with Lee Atwater influencing him,
mm-hmm.
You know, the role that he played in his own loss to Bill Clinton in 1992. I mean, for that kind of self-examination, maybe that's only palatable to politicians with some real intestinal fortitude. I don't know. Because if you're going to write that story, you want to write it true, right?
Yeah. And I mean, the part of the great thing of any sort of political memoir or presidential memoir is also the ability to kind of, you know, for readers and for critics is the ability to identify those blind spots, right? And see to the extent that they grapple or don't grapple with some of those big moments. He kind of does a little bit with Atwater. I mean, he pats himself on the back a lot, like, you know, I campaign the right way and, you know, I don't do the red meat speeches and stuff. But then in a footnote, You know, he admits that the way Lee Atwater ran that campaign was ruthless. And, you know, it literally is in a footnote. And yet that footnote speaks volumes, right? Because you know that it was something he was grappling with. There are truths they don't want to admit, but then sometimes in letters or diary entries, you see snippets of them. He hated the accusation that he cared much more about foreign policy than domestic policy, right? Because that fed into the whole notion that he was disconnected and aloof and didn't understand the people. Yet in the memoirs, he kind of admits it. You know, he basically says that, you know, yeah, I'm much more comfortable, you know, digging into all the aspects of some big international crisis than I am on the domestic side. And he doesn't like dealing with Congress. I mean, he served two terms as a congressman from Texas. He ran for Senate. But there's a moment when he's telling Margaret Thatcher, yeah, you know what? There's a lot of weirdos in Congress. They have all these crazy ideas, you know, like his whole leadership identity was obviously wrapped up in the presidency, not in his time as a lawmaker.
I didn't know until I read your piece, and probably many Americans don't know this, how committed he was to the Fair Housing Act in 1968. I mean, to the chagrin of many Republican voters, including in his own district, right?
Right. He had sort of opposed portions of the Civil Rights Act in earlier that decade. And so when he comes out in favor of the Fair Housing Act, you know, he's a congressman from Texas and he's trying to give a speech explaining his vote back in the district, and he's getting booed. You know, he's getting attacked. But he kind of stuck to his guns, and he, you know, he tried to persuade the people he was speaking to. And he writes in one of his books that really no other moment in his life has measured up to the feeling he had that night when he at the end he got some applause, he got an ovation, and he felt that he had done something transformative. But, you know, in a sense, he had kind of conditioned that home crowd to imagine that he would vote differently because of how, you know, because of what his record was. So so again, there's an interesting mix there of you know, his insights and his blind spots coming together.
Shamara says on Twitter, George H.W. Bush's mother hated it when her children spoke about themselves or boasted, and she reprimanded them when they did so, even into adulthood. As a result, Bush didn't like to talk or write about himself. So this was still the voice of his mother in his ear saying it's not the thing to do. Humility is what you show, mm-hmm. not arrogance.
Yeah, when he's a significant official already, his mother would reach out to him and say that, you know, there's a little bit too much I in that speech, you know, and he was like, but I kind of have to, right? And so I think that's something that was part of kind of the family ethos, you know, and it's very interesting in the Bush family. I mean, there's that kind of reticence to put yourself front and center, and yet there was always the expectation that you would be front and center, right? I mean, you see throughout these books, even early on in life, there's this sense of destiny that he is going to, you know, be in important positions serving the nation. It's this kind of really interesting mix of, you know, arrogance and duty and self-effacement all together.
You know, that sense of destiny, I think, is something, for one thing, it can be dangerous, right? Because you are not self-aware enough to understand what the people around you believe. You're so focused on fulfilling this idea that you have some kind of destiny. Do you get the sense that he kind of struggled with that?
I think that becomes apparent in how he thought about war, for instance. You know, he was, I think, the youngest, you know, naval fighter pilot during World War II. And, you know, he's shot down. He spent some time on a U.S. submarine that rescued him. And during that moment, he's writing these letters to his parents. And there he's very cautious and reflective on the logic of war, which he says, I just don't understand why some survive and others are cut down in their prime. You know, when he's president, You also see, you know, he's hesitant and thoughtful about, you know, I don't want to go all the way to Baghdad when, you know, I'll push Saddam out of Kuwait, but I won't go all the way to Baghdad because I'll get stuck in some unwinnable war. But at the same time, you see that he suddenly feels like he's on some moral crusade. You know, it's good versus evil, you know, and that sense of destiny that he's the key man for the moment really looms large during that war, to the point that his national security advisor, Brent Scowcroft, says that, you know, I worry George is getting too emotionally involved in this. And so I think you do see that mix there, you know, the sense of destiny, of, you know, I am the man for the moment, that could potentially get in the way of some of the more like sober advice he was getting.
Carlos, do you think most presidential memoirs are really worth reading? I mean, how many are truly good? what I'm asking is, what are we really lacking by the fact that he didn't write one?
Well, you know, a lot of I recently was talking to some colleagues, you know, and about books that, you know, memoirs that come sort of before someone runs for president. And I think those are almost always useless, right? Because they're just part of the campaign propaganda. You know, they're the closer you are to running for office, the worse your book is going to be, and the less honest and truly reflective. I think the post-presidential memoirs really vary. You know, I think that you can have ones that are just trying to settle scores, and others that really try to put their experience in some larger context. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Barack Obama does with his memoir, which is coming out early next year. But for instance, you know, Dreams from My Father, which he published, you know, a long, long time ago before he really imagined to be president, was a great book.
It's excellent.
Audacity of Hope, yeah, which he published right before,
yeah,
his campaign, was not a great book, you know. And so here I'm glad that we have these other works of George H.W. Bush's, these four other books that kind of give you different angles into him. And maybe they're enough. But while I was reading them, I really just kept wishing that he'd managed to kind of put everything together into a real, you know, not ghostwritten, just a real personal memoir. But it's something he just was reluctant to do.
Carlos Lozada is the Washington Post nonfiction book critic. Thank you. Good to have you on the show again.
A pleasure. Thank you.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.